Hey, man.
What's up? I don't know. Sorry. I was swallowing at the same time I was talking.
It's fine. Have you ever heard of Prohibition?
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about alcohol today.
Yeah.
Buckle up and get your cards ready because you got to be 21 or over to listen to this episode.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this. This is going to be a long journey.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to be a long episode, but it's going to be a long journey. We're going to have to cover a lot. So buckle up, Buttercup. We're going to start all the way in the 19th century. We're going pretty far into the past.
Go they protest. All look like the most unkissable women, too. they all look like, I'm going to see her in my dreams, dude. What the frick?
And the dad walks down the aisle with the taser. Just
here
carrying
comes the taste. Here comes like the taste.
Things I learned last night.
Picture this. It's about...
Speaking of... Like 19th century is like the
1800s. 1800s, yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Speaking of the 1800s...
Okay.
We're going there.
Oh, to the 1800s? Yeah,
we are.
Learned time travel,
we're
baby.
We're going to Silver Dollar City
yeah,
on
we are.
May 18th.
May 18th for another...
Till and Live.
Till and Live in the park.
At Silver Dollar City.
At Silver Dollar City. And here's what's cool about it.
Get your time machine.
Tickets
will be available soon.
And yeah. And...
We don't want to give away a lot yet.
Yeah, we don't want to reveal too much. It's going to be legit.
We're going to wear overalls.
Well, he's going to be wearing overalls.
And nothing else. The traditional way.
So Prohibition. Prohibition starts long before Prohibition and about 1850.
Prohibition's like the 1920s, right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So we're taking the story back to the 1850s. Right. America was a country. That was found right when it was founded, loved alcohol.
Okay.
There's stories going back to George Washington himself, and him and his cabinet members and soldiers, just drinking on the job all the time. Super just blasted. And that was kind of the culture of society. People drank while they worked. People drank throughout the day. Everybody was constantly drinking. And it was not
alcohol as strong as it is now though?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that people were generally in a week's time consuming three times the alcohol that the general population consumes in a week's time today. So people were drinking a lot and it was pretty normal. So there's two very interesting things about drinking in the 1800s or really pre the Prohibition. The two interesting things were one, day drinking on the job was pretty normal. It was accepted. It wasn't strange. It wasn't something that you just, it wasn't taboo at all.
Right.
Everybody did it.
When you were a child and you heard drinking and driving.
Yes.
Did you think that that meant just
anything,
any drinks?
Any drink.
So when my mom had her Diet Coke.
Yes.
I was like, you're drinking and driving.
You're breaking the law.
You're going to kill us.
Yeah, we're going to die.
I watched a video about this in the DARE program.
Yeah, and they said.
The DARE program really was them trying to scare us straight.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. That was a lot of the 90s, honestly. They had the DARE program for alcohol and drugs. They had Stranger Danger for just other people. anybody else is dangerous. They had a few of those sorts of things where they just try to scare us out of Barney. Pretty much was a scare tactic.
Barney was a scare tactic?
Yeah. Go back and watch those episodes. Most of those episodes are trying to scare you out of doing something.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest, it's been a while since I watched, but that's how I remember it. They're just trying to scare me out of doing stuff. Church was the same way. They had the felt things, and that the felt shows were
pretty scary.
They were just trying to scare you out of doing stuff.
All right.
The 90s were a scare tactic era. In the 1850s, so you drank, they drank
right.
on the job, but also drinking was a man's activity. So the man would leave the home and they would go to the bar
and drink.
It would just be guys and they would be hanging out and they'd be drinking. Women were not a part of it. And so women were separate from the drinking thing. That was not something like it was very culturally looked down upon to drink in mixed company. You only drank with your
spouse.
not even with your spouse, with members of your own sex. That was the only people you drank with. And so men would go drink on the job, and then afterwards they would go to the saloon and they would drink there, but they would never drink around the opposite.
That's what I was most mad at when my mom would drink a Diet Coke. I was like, not around me, woman.
I can't stand to watch you do that. And it was something that, honestly, throughout the 19th century, most women and most wives hated. They did not like having drunk husbands. And they also...
unlike now. They love that now.
And they did not like having absentee husbands because they would go work
they
all day.
They love that now. That's what I'm saying. What do you mean? You're talking like that's new.
Well, this was a growing trend. Like,
okay.
And this was also happening during kind of like the birth of the women's rights movements.
Sure.
And so women were starting to kind of develop a voice for themselves for the first time in history, really. We saw the birth of the women's temperance movement, which was temperance was a movement to be like, hey, you should stop drinking so much alcohol. And a union was put together that was formalized in 1874.
Called
the Women's Christian Temperance Union. And this organization was really put together to just protest drinking. And the women would get together, they would go protest. And that alone terrified the public. They were like, look at all these women protesting, like taking part in some sort of political action.
Protesting or just gossiping?
No, they were protesting. They would go out and they would picket bars.
I thought you were saying they just got together.
No, they would actually protest.
Should tell them to quit drinking.
Yeah, they would picket bars, but they also would protest. They like these were very peaceful protests, and I say that on purpose because they would go. They would sing hymns outside of bars, and they would kneel, and they'd all get together, and they'd be praying right outside the bar door, the saloon door.
Harshing the vibes.
Kind of. All these men super drunk.
Here I am just trying to let loose from my hard day in the field.
Yes.
And I look out there and there's some nuns.
And they're hemming. How am I supposed to knock back a couple cold ones? Well, I have to listen to all this prayer.
Oh my gosh.
It was not received well.
Right.
There was a lot of interactions with the crowds. Men were coming out and booing them and yelling at them and stuff like that. In one case, the fire department came and sprayed them down with the fire hoses.
Oh, geez.
In another case, a owner of a beer garden came out with a tank, not a tank, a cannon.
Leveled the whole town.
Yeah, they were like, what is that? No, he came out with a cannon, the equivalent of a tank in that time. And threatened to shoot them if they didn't leave.
With a can? Why is the beer garden guy got a cannon?
That's a good question.
He served in the war. He got it.
And so
this is from my time in the Civil War.
Probably.
That's what I'm saying.
I kept it. I just took it with me when I finished. And it became a really rampant thing across the nation. There was these women that were a part of the Women's Christian Temperance Union protesting bars and things like that.
Sure.
The most famous by far is a woman by the name of Carrie Nation. And she is my hero. Because Carrie Nation? Yeah. Carrie Nation, which first of all,
sounds like a Christian name. Radio station.
Hey, you're listening to Carrie Nation.
Carrie Nation. Carry your burdens.
Carrie, she was one of the Women's Temperance Union people. Okay. So she would go protest with a group of women holding signs like this. This is a pretty popular...
Lips that touch liquor shall not touch ours. I like it.
And so she would go
they
protest...
They all look like the most unkissable women, too. they all look like... You know, in The Wizard of Oz, when she goes into that trailer and sees who's like, whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what every woman in this picture looks like.
Yeah, that checks out. That does check out. And Carrie Nation was a part of the union. And she was very, very passionate about this organization.
Okay.
And she would travel around. She was based in Kansas, but she would travel around the country doing these campaigns. And she was a part of a very large effort to actually ban the sale of liquor in Kansas. And so she was a part of this campaign, and it didn't quite go the way that she hoped it would. And so on June 5th, 1900, she awoke in the middle of the night, and she felt she received a vision from the Lord.
Okay.
And here's how she describes it. She says, she awakened by a voice that seemed to be speaking in my heart. And the words said, go to Kiowa, which is a town in Kansas.
And he said, it is finished.
And she said, and my hands were lifted high and thrown down. And I heard the words, I'll stand by you. And so she claimed that the way she interpreted this was obviously go to Kiowa.
Was he wearing a hat?
She did take a lot of Benadryl.
She saw the hat man.
The hat man said, go to Kiowa. And I'll be with you every night for the rest of your life.
I'll be with you. She interpreted how?
So she interpreted that the way her hands were lifted up and thrown back down was her words, smash, smash, smash. So she went to Kiowa and she found a saloon in Kiowa. And she picked up a bunch of rocks and she destroyed the place. She just started throwing rocks through the windows. Throwing rocks through windows, throwing rocks at all the liquor bottles, throwing rocks into like all their like their barrels, like contaminating their barrels and like breaking chairs, like just wrecking, like literally just tore this place to shreds. She went to jail for this.
Sure.
Served a short sentence and then went home after this happened. And her husband said,
where were you at? Where you been?
Her husband, who she later divorced, but this husband, she said in an interview later, said the best thing he ever said to her in her entire marriage. And he said, you know, it would have been a lot easier if you used an axe. So then Carrie Nation became the axe smasher.
For those listening, it's a black and white photo of an older woman. She's old. Mm-hmm. Holding a Bible in one hand and an axe in the other.
But it's like a tomahawk. It's more like a tomahawk.
Yeah. And yeah. She's wearing gloves.
She's wearing leather gloves.
And small little glasses. And she's... I mean...
And so she starts
going... I'm going to see her in my dreams, dude. What the frick?
She starts going from town to town to town.
Okay.
Smashing bars and saloons with her axe and breaking apart their barrels.
Is that a picture of her?
This is a picture of her smashing the barrels outside of a saloon and wrecking the place. And eventually she forms a posse that travels with her and they roll into saloons and bars.
Just vandalizing.
And they vandalize the heck out of it. They dump out all their liquor. They smash everything. They break it to shreds.
Completely sober.
Completely sober.
They're Carrie like, Nation. We're here to ruin your fun.
She is my hero. And it became a very popular thing in local bars to have this sign somewhere in the barn that says, all nations are welcome except Carrie, and a couple tomahawks on it.
That's a great shirt right there.
It is actually really sick. Because, yeah, she just went from bar to bar, smashing everything in the bar. And so this movement starts really picking up some steam.
Like, you've seen the sign at a couple bars around Kansas City, right? And say, everyone's welcome. And then underneath it, it says, except Josh Hawley.
That's pretty good. Pretty funny. So Prohibition hasn't started yet. This is the early 1900s. You got the women's temperance movement is getting really big.
Sure.
And they're really campaigning to get rid of alcohol. They don't want it anywhere in the world, especially around them. And you've got a larger group that is kind of taking to borderline violence. Well, I guess you can call this violence. It's violence against property.
Yeah.
And they're destroying a lot of things. And it's... how do we...
Okay. It's however.
it's something where there is a this large group of people who are opposed to it, and it's mostly like fundamentalist Christians,
right,
that are opposed to it. But the rest of the population is like, prohibition's never going to happen.
Sure.
Like, come on, smash as much as you want, hold up as many signs as you want. We're still going to drink, okay? Until there was a guy by the name of Wayne Wheeler.
Yeah. Wayne Wheeler, haha. Wayne Wheeler. Okay.
Sorry. It's just Wayne Wheeler. Here, let me get you a picture of Wayne Wheeler so you can picture.
Sure.
Picture
so this. I can picture him.
Here's a picture of Wayne Wheeler.
Hey, Wayne, he looks like a nerd.
Wayne was
he looks like a weeb.
Wayne was a fundamentalist Christian.
Uh-huh.
And he knew, hey, what we're doing right now to try to make prohibition happen.
Never going
to
work.
Never going to make prohibition happen. And he said, we got to get into their heads. And what we're doing, he's like, we're getting into their hearts and angering them and making them drink some more. We got to get into
their heads. We got to turn this into a culture war.
Yeah. And so what he did is he started campaigning a little differently. And so okay. He would go and he would put together these rallies in towns. And he would get a group of fundamentalist Christians together. And he mm-hmm. would say, all the fundamentalist Christian talking points. He'd be like, yeah, the liquor is destroying our families. It's evil. It's sinful. We should not be a part of it. Like everything about it, it's ruining our society around fundamentalist Christians. Then he would go to groups of immigrants and he would say, hey, the alcohol is making it harder for you to assimilate into society. And you're having a harder time finding jobs. It's ruining your career. It's making it impossible for you to actually get the step up that you came here for. And then he would go to groups of alcoholics and he would say, hey, the immigrants are coming in here and they're sober and they're beating you out for your jobs.
Stealing your jobs.
Yeah, they're taking your jobs because they're not drunk like you. Next thing you know, you're going to lose your jobs and you're going to be on the streets because you can't keep up with the sober-minded immigrants that are stealing your jobs. And so he was coming to all these different groups with different stories that he was threading together
okay.
to make them think alcohol was the big, bad, bad guy. And it was a different story in everything he would do. And oftentimes be contradictory stories, but it worked.
Worked, right.
There was these big groups that were starting to form of people who were like, you know what, he's right. Like this stuff is ruining my opportunity at jobs. It is causing crime in our cities. It is doing whatever the big enemy was in that group. He made alcohol the source, the root of whatever that big enemy was for that group.
Sure.
And campaigned for it that way. And his movement began to grow. And somehow no one ever put together the fact that this guy was just lying to them the whole time. They believed him wherever he went.
So he's just doing anti-alcohol propaganda, essentially?
Essentially,
like he's
yeah.
just lying.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just lying to the public and letting them hear whatever they want to hear.
Sure.
But spinning it against alcohol, no matter what the thing is.
Well, I mean, like isn't that what fitness influencers are doing right now too? They go, listen, if you drink a single beer, you're going to lose. You're going to end up just like a fat lard.
It's kind of, yeah, honestly, it's pretty similar. And so he was able to spin this. And in 1920, the prohibition thing had come on the ballot for years. And it okay. had actually been starting to pass throughout a lot of different countries. And so a combination of the
really?
Women's temperance unit. Yeah, I think America was like the 10th country to do it. It happened in Canada. It happened in Russia, Iceland, Soviet Union, Finland, Norway. Oh, sorry, Norwegia, Denmark. Like it happened in a lot of countries before us. So we were late to the game. But a combination of the Women's Temperance Unit, the Wayne Wheeler, and then a big part of this was World War One. World War One happens, and the big bad
and he
guys,
goes, this wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for alcohol.
If it wasn't for, well, what actually happened, what he didn't really have a part of this campaign. This the ground was laid. The groundwork
sure.
was there. Everybody was there was these murmurs of people being like, maybe alcohol is
Wayne
bad.
Wheeler the first.
It was like
W-W-1.
Coincidence?
Yeah, I mean, if you got to start a world war to get people to quit drinking.
I mean, kudos to you. Now, the groundwork was there. It was like cigarettes in 2000. It was like most of the world was like, yeah, that's probably not good. But there's still a good chunk of people that
but
were still doing
every
it.
Restaurant you go to asks yeah. if there's a smoking or a non-smoking section.
Yeah, pretty much everyone knew. Probably not a good thing. It's kind of like
now wild.
It's kind of like social media.
There
right
really
now.
Was no non-smoking section when you think about it. When you go back in that time,
it just because yeah, it wafted through.
Because you can just it doesn't, smell it.
Yeah, it doesn't go away. It's just little less.
Also, what? Who's not able to sit through a meal?
What do you mean?
Are you like...
Oh, and not be able to smoke? I think so.
While you're eating?
I think so, yeah. Because it was... I mean, there was a time where it was ubiquitous. Like, it was... You just did it all the time. And so I guess think there was some people who would like during their meal.
Do you think that we'll get to, I say this all the time, actually. I think we'll get to a spot in like a couple decades where we talk about social media the way we talk about smoking cigarettes now.
Yeah. I think smoking cigarettes or like in you, 2000
did that.
Is like social media right now. I do think that's the scenario. Cause we all recognize probably not good for us.
This is probably not a
definitely
great
not good for the youths. But we're all still just like, it's
yeah,
we're
fine. Still doing it. We can still do it on planes.
Hey, thanks for checking out this episode. If you like it, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Speaking of future episodes, we have a ton of past episodes. We have a back catalog of well over 100 episodes. So check those out. My current favorite is Nellie Bly. She was a journalist from the early 1900s who totally changed the industry, especially for women in the industry. Super cool story, but also kind of crazy, some of the things that she did. We had a lot of fun in that episode. So check that out. Don't forget to subscribe. But ultimately, just thanks for being here. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. This time of year is interesting because everybody's kind of coming out of their winter hibernation and wanting to go do stuff. And if you're anything like me, that's not great. Not because you don't like your family or you don't like your friends or anything like that, but because your social battery drains pretty easily and you need more time to recharge than a lot of other people in your life. Last summer, I was not great at this. I let myself do way too much and I got really, really drained and it was a rough experience all around. Luckily, I've got a therapist who does a great job helping me set my boundaries and keeping me accountable to my boundaries, especially in areas like this. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's completely online, it's flexible, it's convenient, and it fits literally any schedule. It's really easy to sign up. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and you'll get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/tillin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tillin. TILLN. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. Yeah. And so that's kind of where it was with alcohol. Everybody was kind of like, we probably shouldn't be doing this, but like we still are, you know, was kind of where it was at. And yeah. The opinion was starting to sway. But World War One happens and the new big bad guys, Germany, were big into beer.
I thought they were who's the bad guys in World War One?
Germany.
No.
Yes. Yes. Germany was the big bad
guys. I guess I don't remember World War One.
Yeah. There was a group of them that were involved in it, but Germany was the head. And then World War One ends.
Twice?
World War One ends, they kind of reestablish, and then Hitler comes back, and Hitler kind of does what another big bad guy that starts with the letter P is doing now, where he's like, remember the glory days? And then everybody else in the world was like, you are really bad.
Why did you say it starts with a P? As if it was like another guy who starts with a P, as if Hitler starts with a P. Fitler?
It's silent. A lot of people don't know that. No, but the big bad guys, Germany.
Okay.
They were so bad to the public that everything German you could not have a part of. And they were changing German things. So for example, sauerkraut became, I think it was like Liberty sauce or something like that. Like they were
Liberty sauce? You're saying they freedom fries?
Yeah, they did. They changed everything. And
sauerkraut just became hot dog lettuce.
Hot dog lettuce. Yeah, would you like some hot dog lettuce with that? And a lot of German customs started to be seen as taboo.
Okay.
And this was kind of the nail in the coffin because they're like, Germans are drunks. We need to differentiate
Germans
ourselves.
Are drunks.
We need to differentiate
obviously,
ourselves.
Obviously, that's what the only thing they're known for. I'm sure they'll take that reputation now. I'm sure now they're like, please remember
please
us as
that. Just remember us as drunks.
Don't bring up anything else.
All we are is drunk.
Ah,
yeah, they're like, Germans are drunks. We don't want to be anything like them. And right. so, that was kind of the final nail in the coffin that led a lot of, especially in Europe, those European countries that were like most impacted by World War One, started passing the prohibition laws. And in 1920, US passed theirs. And this was an interesting thing. Prohibition was a very strange era in America, because from 1920 to 1933, so 13 years, alcohol consumption or the sale of alcohol was illegal. The consumption of alcohol was legal. But
if you can get it,
yeah, getting it was really hard. What we saw happen pretty
quickly. So really they just made it so that only the rich could partake.
Well, kind of. A lot of the rich before, because there was like a deadline. It was kind of like the purge. Everybody knew it was coming. Up. Yeah, and everybody stocked up on their alcohol. So a lot of rich people did stock up on alcohol before before
like COVID. Passed.
Because a lot of people were like, yeah, this isn't going to last. I don't think anybody expected this to last 13 years. But when it passed, what it meant was you couldn't sell it and you couldn't have like a bar or a saloon or anything like that. So all those got shut down. Liquor stores got shut down.
Applebee's like, almost didn't make it through.
Yeah, Applebee's cannot be profitable without their dollar margaritas.
Well, I mean, you're not going there for the food. Let's be real.
Let's be honest. what was interesting though is there was a couple clauses that made this work.
Okay.
There was a couple
Mr. and Mrs.
There was a couple clauses that were like exploited is maybe a better way to say this.
Okay.
So you were allowed to sell alcohol to clergy because of communion and for like religious rites.
Okay.
So all of a sudden a lot of people became clergymen.
Like, I'm a priest.
I'm a priest. So they could buy wine. Or
I can't sell this to you. Our father says, you may. He came to me in a dream. and he said, smash. So
I guess that's what we're going to have to
do. If you don't sell it to me, I'm going to smash.
So there's groups of people who are getting around it by becoming clergymen. There was another thing where alcohol, as long as it wasn't alcohol, you could sell it. So there was these things.
Okay.
There was these things known as wine blocks, which were blocks of wine, but it wasn't fermented yet. And so it was literally like a cube of every like dehydrated grape juice, I guess. And they were like, yeah, this is just a block. If you put it in your cabinet for a couple of days, don't do that because then it's going to ferment and then you could melt it and then it's wine. But we don't think you should do that. But you should
is
buy
it
this.
Frozen?
I don't know if it's frozen. I don't know exactly how they blocked it. I don't know how they cubed it. But okay. It was a cube of basically not yet fermented wine. And they're like, you just store it in your cabinet for like a week or two and it'll ferment and then you melt it and it's wine. But because
melting
it wasn't fermented.
Melting implies that it's ice.
I mean, you can melt plastic.
Okay.
You can melt anything if it's hot enough. I can melt you.
Okay.
I don't know what it's made out of. Somehow they formed this into a cube and they said, you keep it in your cabinet for a couple of weeks, it'll ferment and you got wine. But because it wasn't yet fermented, they were allowed to sell it.
Technically.
So there's like some of these workarounds that existed that people were exploiting.
Sure.
But it still wasn't enough. So people got into
moonshining. Yeah.
Moonshine became very popular because obviously you could make it at home and you're not selling it. So technically speaking, it's legal for you to moonshine if you're only consuming for yourself.
Yeah.
The second you sell moonshine, you're breaking the law. But if you're just eating it or drinking it yourself, legal.
I have a lot of friends who I give it to and they pay me rent.
And they donate to me.
I'm a priest. and they give to the church.
And at church
right now we meet at the schoolhouse. Yeah, it's a mobile church and eventually we're going to save it for our own building. That's why they're giving me money.
Yes.
And we're taking communion with moonshine.
Moonshine. Yes. It's
yes. Yes, yes, yes.
It's moonshine and movement for the Lord. That's what we're doing. We're a trendy church. Can you say that word again? Trendy? We've never heard that before.
Why does he talk like that? We're a trendy church.
It's because he's sketchy and he's trying to get away with it. And so moonshiners became popular, and the United States government was in a bit of a predicament with this. This amendment, this is the 18th Amendment that passed to allow prohibition. And there was a lot of political pressure to pass this law. It kind of became the point where it was like so much of the popular vote was going to go in favor of this, that if you wanted to be elected president, you had to be on the prohibition side, whether you really were or not. And so that's kind of how it happened. But they didn't have the budget anywhere to create a force to enforce this. The police, obviously, they wanted to continue being police. And occasionally they would get involved in prohibition stuff. But they put together a prohibition force. And this was an underfunded, very small kind of police force that was put together to go around and see if anybody was drunk and take them to jail if they were. And to see if anybody was selling liquor and stuff like that.
Sure.
But they were underfunded, didn't have enough money to do what they were trying to do. And so what really happened is it was a situation where they could not possibly enforce this law. They did not have the numbers to keep up with this. And it very quickly became something where the general public realized, oh,
we can just get away with this.
Yeah. Am I going to get caught? Most likely not. Is somebody going to get caught? Probably. But am I going to get caught?
It's like me with street parking.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are the odds?
What are the odds that I'm the one that gets towed? It's kind of like I heard
someone... Is somebody going to get towed? Yeah. But they deserve it.
I was listening to a podcast. Someone described it like Napster or LimeWire. It's like, yeah, technically, we're stealing music.
Sure.
But am I going to be the one that gets in trouble for this? Some people did. Some people got an example made out of them.
Yeah.
But is it
going to be... Worst thing that's going to happen to me is... Nothing. I mean, yeah, my parents' computer is destroyed.
Toasted.
I'm jamming a Reliant K while they're searching on forums online. How do I remove virus? I'm also responding to their questions. I'm upstairs on my computer responding.
Subway King says, there's nothing you can do about it. Let your son download more music. There's some kid in Mississippi who's running up a tab on eBay with their credit card. And
oh man, my mom was an eBay fiend. One time she bought a pair of shorts for me on eBay. And I don't know if you know this about me when I was in eighth grade.
Yeah.
But I was the size of a grown man. So these are grown up shorts.
Yeah.
And so I put them on and I went to school. As you do with my shorts on. But in my pocket was a $50 bill.
Oh, from some grown up that they left in the
pocket in their eBay of the eBay.
Ooh, shorts thing. Wow.
Yeah.
What
and
a
you know
great deal.
What my mom did was she taught me a valuable life lesson.
What?
And she sent that money back to that person.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Narc.
Lame.
What?
Yeah.
That is insane.
And she did this whole like, we got to do the right thing. We got to send this back. And like I wrote on the envelope and we sent it back.
Wow.
And
you know how much power you had in eighth grade with a $50 bill?
Dude, you know how much power I'm going to have when we're touring her retirement facilities?
With a $50 bill?
Here's your budget, Mom.
Shoulda let me keep it.
We're gonna do the right thing.
Okay.
If I had invested that $50, too much money in 2007.
Okay, so prohibition became kind of the unenforceable.
She did give me a block of what was not wine yet.
Not yet wine.
She said, when you graduate high school, you can...
It was kind of like those Disney towels where you like you throw it in the bathtub and then it's a towel, but before you throw it in the bathtub, it's like a dice.
Yeah. It's those.
Same thing. Throw it in the tub and you've got wine. So this was like an unenforceable crime at this point.
Okay.
And there was a decent chunk of the population that was like, oh, we're not going to do this because they were the ones that campaigned for it.
Right.
But there was a larger chunk that was like, what, you think I'm going to stop drinking? And
they didn't even know.
The news hadn't hit him yet. They're still in the saloon, still
what
drunk.
What happened?
They got so drunk before. The saloon's been
read
closed for 2 weeks.
Yeah, drunk people do that thing with their mouth. I used to be an Uber driver. I hung out with a lot of drunk people.
You didn't hang out. They paid you to drive them somewhere.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
So the enforcement.
One time
was tough.
I drove this group of girls.
Yeah.
I was single at the time. And
okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Yeah, because you could have let them in your car if you were.
Yeah. per the Billy Graham the Billy rule. Graham rule. No, I was, you know, I was flirting.
Yeah.
With the
yeah,
girl
yeah,
in the yeah. front seat. There's three of them in the back seat. They're all. You know, I'm dropping them off.
They're having a night.
And the girl in the front seat goes, do you smoke weed? And yeah. I was like, no. It's like, not my
Why'd
vibe.
Why'd you laugh at me?
Sorry. I was like, I don't know if you can tell by looking at me, but I was a youth pastor. don't do that. And she goes, well, do you want to come upstairs and hang out with us the rest of the night?
Yeah.
And I was like, honestly, I really needed the money. So I was like, I got to keep driving. I'm sorry. And I didn't want to hang out with him. I don't know. I was like, maybe I'll get her number, whatever. But as I'm talking to her, her friend leans up the middle seat and just goes, she's not going to make out with you, dude. I was like, I didn't initiate anything
here. Thanks for telling me.
She's the one saying, will you hang out with me?
She is the one.
And she's like, she's not going to make out with you.
Okay.
And I was like, all right.
Thanks for letting me know.
And when she got out of the car, she was like, I would have. She didn't say that. But I just thought that was, I'm saying I've been around a lot of drunk people. One time, a guy, I think I told him on the podcast.
Yeah, you
did I tell it?
I think so.
But the guy who I was driving him, silent the whole time.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, you got to take a left here. But it's a one-way street. And I was like, I got to turn right because it's a one-way street. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'm going to stab you in the neck. And I was like, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I was like, all right, you get out.
I'm going to call the police.
Yeah. I'm going to stab you in the
neck.
They
showed up. They tased him. And they weren't going to, but I asked them to. Will you tase him, please?
And they were like,
what? I said, will you tase him? And then he leaned up. It was a female cop. He's passed out on the sidewalk. And she shows up. And I'm like, hey, will you tase him? And he wakes up out of his dead drunk slumber. And goes, she's not going to make out with you, dude. She's not going to make out with you. And then she was like, yeah, I'll tase him.
He's like, yeah, I'll tase him.
So that was better than getting made out with. I'll tell you what.
It was like one thing we do.
Watching that guy get tased was just...
It's the highlight of my year.
Highlight of my year.
This is my best man speech for years. What does this have to do with this?
This is my best man speech for years. What are you talking about? Yeah. Every time I'm the best
every
man
time
at someone's
you're
wedding.
The best man at someone's wedding, you told that story.
I am multiple people's best man. I like that scenario.
And everybody,
and every time I go,
everybody's like, I don't
care. Man, I'm so glad to be here for... for my one of my best dearest friends. This night is almost as good as the night that I got to watch a female cop tase a man who threatened me.
So drunk. Yeah. She did it three times.
I felt so protected by her.
I felt so safe.
I felt so safe in her arms. And I hope that as you two go on this journey of marriage, that she will protect you.
Oh, there is a connection. Okay.
The way that Officer Danielle.
Sweet. Oh, that's so cute.
Danielle Weebles, protected me that night.
Aww.
And to remember this night, let's raise a toast of non-alcoholic drinks.
To the happy couple.
And I'm going to have to tase him. It's the part of the wedding no one likes.
Yeah.
But everyone sees it coming.
Everybody knows. You got to tase the groom.
The time has come.
To tase the groom.
To tase the groom. in front of everyone in the room.
The piano starts to play the song. The doors open and the dad walks down the aisle with the taser. And it's ejected. He's just here carrying the
Here comes the taser. What kind of taser are you talking about, dude?
You know that you shoot it and the spikes come out. He's holding the spikes.
He's already shot it?
He's holding the spikes and it's like flopping around on the ground.
Yeah. This is a really long bit.
He shoves them
We did an audit and we learned that we should do less bits in our show to maybe reach a broader audience.
Here we are.
And I don't think he's listening to more because we don't pay him to listen to more. But if he is, I want him to know I didn't like that advice.
I liked the advice, but I can't stop.
This is a bitsy episode.
Itsy bitsy episode. Okay, so the law was an unenforceable law.
Yeah.
And it just more and more ways to break this law started popping up.
Sure.
And then came the most famous that also just started happening again a few years ago, speakeasies.
Speakeasies are cool.
Yeah, they just kind of popped up a few years ago.
I just like...
Again.
It's not even like a... It's a fun, like, secret thing.
Yeah. Secrets are fun.
I want to open a... Yeah.
That's why the government keeps so many. It's just fun.
It's just fun, dude. I want to get elected just to know the secrets.
Hey, Mr. President, now that you've like passed the torch on to the next president, can you tell us any secrets or like why you guys keep so many secrets from
the
public?
That is actually why I think that all this stuff, there's no actual government secrets. Have I told you this?
Yeah. Like
we landed the moon. We did all the stuff. They're not hiding too much, mm-hmm. right? Because I guarantee day one, he would have tweeted it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't going to keep it.
It is interesting though, like it's like, I mean, that might be, never mind. that's a little much even for this podcast.
Maybe
we should talk about it in the After the Fiddle.
I don't want
to. We'll talk about it in the After the Fiddle. So speakeasies pop up and speakeasies were a significant thing in American history.
A lot of them are in caves.
Yeah, they're in caves. They're in basements. They're in fronts. So there's a shop that sells lawn gooses, but you pull one of the geese.
Sells what?
Lawn gooses, lawn geese.
What?
Lawn geese, lawn gooses.
I don't know what you're saying.
Your lawn outside, a goose sticking your lawn.
Why is there a store dedicated to lawn geese?
Because it's the front. That's not what they're actually selling. They're just selling bogus products. And then you go to
Why was that the example you used though?
Because there's one of them in my hometown.
There's a shop... It sells lawn geese?
Yeah, we've talked about this. It was called Lawn Goose Designs. It was open for like 11 years, had a giant parking lot. Never saw a car in that parking lot, but it was open for like 11 years and it was always open. And it
I
was,
worked there for a bit. They said you could take as many geese as you wanted as long as it was still in the conveyor belt.
I just walked and just caught these lawn geese.
Okay, so anyway, whatever. So a place that sells lawn geese, I guess.
And you walk up to the person at the...
And you just say a secret little code.
Yeah, you say
that was a speakeasy. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think that was a CIA front. But but this one is a speakeasy. You walk up, you say cock a doodle doo, which was a weird phrase because that's not what geese do.
Okay, how they throw you off.
Yeah, they say you say cock a doodle doo, and the guy
quack quack, they shoot you.
The guy grabs one of the geese, like strangles the geese, mm-hmm. and then the floor opens out from under you. Go down a slide. And then you fall in this room and it's like...
Well, quit talking.
Oh, sorry.
Can't tell too much about it. But I do like that's what I'm saying. I like the vibe.
Yeah, they're like playing jazz.
I like a secretive vibe.
There's like, they have like the stage and it's like the classic like 20s showgirls. It's like very Great Gatsby vibe in there. And
my
like,
life's not exciting. I need some secrets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start some.
Well, I mean, I've got
that one secret.
I've got that one.
And so speakeasies became very, very popular.
Sure.
And... What was interesting about speakeasies is this speakeasies themselves rapidly changed the culture in America. And I don't know if anybody's made this connection and I don't know if I'm qualified to, but I'm going to. I really think that the speakeasy was what made the Roaring Twenties the Roaring Twenties, because it was for the first time really in American history was a lot of the cultural norms and regulations around alcohol were stripped away. Because now it was illegal to do this anyways.
Yeah.
And so now it was like, well,
there's no regulation.
There's no regulation.
We can just overserve.
You can overserve. There was no legal limit. There was no age minimum. There was no more cultural norm of you only drank with people of the same sex.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden it was different. The vibe around alcohol changed. And it wasn't, you didn't day drink. You didn't go drink after like...
Yeah, it was secretive.
All of the guys... Yeah, it was a party and it was a secretive party and it was like you were kind of... It was a club. You're in or you're out. You had to be in the know to get into it.
Yeah.
And it was...
It's a lot like our Patreon supporters.
Yeah.
Use code cockadoodledo.
That's definitely going to be the
text cockadoodle dude.
I guarantee Daniel's going to make that the Discord bot signal. Cockadoodle dude.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for checking out this episode of Things I Learned Last Night. If you're here and you're a little shocked because you've been watching ASMR videos all night and you woke up to the sound of my laughter, let me help you out real quick and join back in the ASMR. One thing that would help us a lot in the algorithm is if you left some comments or some reviews. If you're on the podcast app, we'd really appreciate that. And it would help us grow this show. So thanks for your support. But if not, and you're just here trying to sleep, I hope I interrupted it. But here's another advertisement. It changed the culture around alcohol overnight because of the speakeasies, because it was kind of, it forced the hand on it.
Sure.
And then for the first couple of years, it was just stuff like this. And then a couple of years into it, something interesting happened. We can call that the criminal underworld. Because obviously something became illegal and that meant
crime.
They get to do it. If it's illegal, the criminals get to do it.
Finally, a new enterprise to embark on. Speakeasies.
So the mafia was like, we sell alcohol now. And so what they did is they found rich people who had stockpiled alcohol, stole it all from them, started selling it.
Is that what they did?
Yeah. Or they would find shipments of like clergymen that were shipping all their alcohol. Different situations like that. Yeah, they'd rob it and they'd sell it. And then they'd manufacture their own alcohol and they'd sell it. And it became a massive criminal enterprise. And cities all over the nation, like these mafias and gangs started popping up where their main export was alcohol. And they were getting very rich off alcohol. And at first, for the first couple of years, it was relatively peaceful. They were, except for the robberies. The robberies were obviously not very peaceful.
Yeah, it sucked.
But the everything else they did, they like kind of stayed out of each other's
business.
Everything
else they did.
What I wish to say... The mafias and the gangs respected each other. They stayed out of each other's business.
Sure.
But a couple of years into it, things started to grow. They started to realize they were competitors and they're criminals already. So they just started killing each other and encroaching on each other's territory and gunning each other down in the streets. And it became very violent.
I love how quickly he's just telling the whole history. And I mean, eventually things got a little hairy. They started gunning each other down in the streets. Blood was flowing into the gutters. And the streets were colored red for weeks. You know, things got weird. So the government was like, "Whoa, we don't like that." You know,
there was a guy named George Remus. And I'll show you a picture of George Remus.
Please.
George Remus was a prohibition officer.
I like his hat.
His job was to catch people who were breaking the prohibited.
Sure.
And he realized really quickly that he was paid a little bit of money to do what he was doing, and it was very dangerous. And the mafia was just as dangerous.
So he just went to the mafia.
Making significantly more money.
Played a double agent.
And so he just straight up left the prohibition agency. And he started...
That's one of the first old-timey photos you've shown me that looks like he could... Like, this looks like he could be a 2023 person. You know what I'm saying? Like, in that outfit. Look at his face. He looks like an insurance salesman guy.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is, I mean, obviously his hat's kind of out of style.
Right.
But like the suit's timeless and his haircut is kind of coming back into style now.
Right.
Is back in style. So like because that's the thing that I've always thought or I've been thinking lately. We talk about generations. Have you seen this? Like people talk about how like every generation looks younger when they were young. Like, so if you look at teenagers in the 90s, they look older than teenagers now.
Okay.
And teenagers in the 80s look older than teenagers now.
I disagree with that now. Teenagers now look old, dude.
You think so?
I think there are people who are in their 20s who are on social media that I go, you are not in your 20s.
There is. I did recently, very recently, see a TikTok about that. But what I've seen a lot is like over the years, you go each decade, they look older than the current decade's teenagers. And I think the reason for that is just style. I think they have haircuts and clothing styles that a lot of that generation just carried into adulthood. And so we associate their style with old. We don't associate the way they look with old. That's my thought. But I did also see a TikTok, I think yesterday, about Gen Z looking older than millennials. And this guy was claiming it was because they're stressed. Which...
maybe be less stressed.
Which, yeah, just stop whining about it.
Man, you know what? That sounds like a spending problem.
Just pull yourself up that by your bootstraps.
Like, that sounds like you just got to... cut out Starbucks and cut out get rid of the dog. Toast and
get rid of the dog. You can't afford the dog.
Can't afford it.
Yeah. Get rid of the dog. You have
I know you love him, but kill him.
Kill him. Kill the dog.
It'll teach you some life lessons.
Yep. That'll get you there.
It'll undo the last 50 years of aggressive politics that have put us in a situation where you're no longer able to afford a home or make a livable income on a normal job. And so now you got to work two incomes at least in your family household. And now some of you got to have like two or three jobs each, you know? And so it'll undo all that if you just kill that dog.
It's the dog's fault.
Kill the dog.
Kill the dog. I got that dog in me.
And don't let him touch your milk.
Don't let that dog touch your milk. George realized I'm not as rich as the mafia. But
I'd like to be.
And so he learns all those tactics and he starts robbing.
He just starts his own side mafia?
He starts his own mafia.
Okay.
And so he starts robbing these.
Yeah, how do you start a mafia? Well, I mean, that's what I was actually, you know what I was thinking? Was because I'm watching Fargo, and this one's in the set in the 1950s, where the Italian mob is in Kansas City, and like you got your higher ups, obviously,
yeah.
But how is everyone else just there?
I think they get roped in. Like I think they're part of the family. A lot of them are part of the family, like because they have big families.
Sure,
so they're part of that extended family, and they're just kind of stuck. But I think some people get blackmailed into it. Like they get stuck. Because they see something, or they are like,
or they're just trying to make some quick money.
Yeah,
and like they get in, and now they know too much. There's no way out.
They get a gambling debt.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, they take a loan from the mafia, and it's like,
I guess that's what I was trying to figure out. I was like, why would you be one of the henchmen?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't. I do think there's probably some people who are like, yeah, I'm going to work my way up the ladder.
Why are you my henchman?
Well, I took a loan from you, and I'm paying off my debt.
Shut your mouth.
No, George. So George,
you were supposed to be funny about it, not real.
So George, he with $20 to his name and just the clothes on his back, he robbed his first transport
with $50 in my eBay shorts
and a small loan of $1 million.
I robbed that train.
Starts his mafia empire. No, he was a little smarter than most mafia men, and so what he did was he got together a group of henchmen, and he purchased from another mafia a bunch of liquor as a clergyman. And so it was like legal alcohol. And so he had his legal clergy alcohol. And then he transported that to where he was going to use that alcohol. And then he had a group of his hired henchmen that robbed that train and stole the alcohol.
Okay, so he could report it as a loss.
So it was a loss. So legally, he was clean.
Yeah.
But he had this downstream that robbed that, and then the downstream was selling that illegally. But he was off the books on it, so he was fair. And so he was successful doing this for a few years. And eventually the prohibition agents like followed the trail and were able to link it all back to him. And so he goes to jail. At this point, he's a multimillionaire, very, very wealthy.
Sure.
Massive house in
Because all the other prohibition abolitionists, whatever they were, prohibition agents.
Yeah.
Well, they were prohibition.
Yes.
Not anti.
They were pro-prohibition.
Okay. Anyway, they were, all the other agents were like, why don't we have big houses?
Yes.
That's where you get.
A lot of them got dirty and corrupt.
Sure.
And a lot of them were taking like bribes and under the table money to
just turn a blind eye to stuff.
Sure.
A lot of them got black belt by the mafia too. George got caught. George went to jail. George had a massive house in Chicago, very rich. And he told his wife when he went to jail, he got like a 2-year sentence. He's like, look after my stuff. I'll be back in 2 years. And she said, okay. And so she sold everything he owned and ran off with another man.
can't trust him.
And so he gets released from jail. And this is a different time. So he has no idea. He deserves a sentence, gets released from jail, comes back to his house and it's empty. And she's not there. And so he realizes what happened, obviously. And he's furious. And so some time passes. And one day he's riding in a cab and he sees in another vehicle his wife with another man.
She didn't go far enough away.
Same town.
That's so dumb.
So he sees her and he tells the cab driver to run her off the road. The cab driver's like, okay. And so the
cab driver's like, all right.
So the cab driver runs her car off the road and like they crash. He gets out and she's like, she gets out of the car and he shoots her in the head right there in the street. And obviously gets arrested, goes to trial. And in the trial, he was a lawyer before he got into being a prohibition agent. Okay. So he represents himself. And in his representation, he pleads insanity. So throughout his representation, he starts
being like, ah.
He starts asking all these crazy questions. He starts going between sobbing and like all this different stuff. And he paints this story of he got in trouble. He went to jail. He served his time. He's a reformed man. His
so
wife
he's
stole
pleading
from him.
Insanity on behalf of himself?
Yes.
Your Honor, my client's insane.
That's right. I'm crazy.
I'm so crazy.
I'm a crazy guy.
I'm a crazy man.
He's a crazy man.
He's a crazy. Can't you tell this guy's crazy? Can't you tell? And then he slithers across the bench. Can't you tell this man's crazy?
He's watching like, okay.
It's pretty crazy of you. And so, and he paints the sob story of he gets in trouble. He does get in trouble. He serves his time and right. He's a reformed man. He comes out of jail. And during that time, his wife leaves him. She takes his fortune. She runs off with another man.
Right.
And it put him into a dark place. And now he's an insane man.
Broke him.
And he saw her and he shot her. But that was
really, it's on the cab driver.
That was a part of his insanity. And he does such a good job at defending himself that the jury deliberates for 19 minutes. And they come back and they say not guilty. And he walks completely free of any like repercussions of the crime. Walks free. And this made national
people
headlines.
People in the past were so gullible.
This makes national headlines. And the majority of people do side with Remus, thinking his wife was the one in the wrong. And so this was...
People hated women so much.
This was a huge deal. Around the same time, around the same time, we have the legendary Al Capone, who we've all heard of. He's a mafia man known as Scarface because he had a scar on his face as a child, which actually that was not the nickname he liked. He did not like the nickname Scarface and he did not want that to stick. This is not a joke. He preferred Snorky. And he kept trying to make Snorky stick.
Snorky. Hey, Scarface. Snorky.
Call me Snorky. Are you sure, sir? I think Scarface instills a little bit
Scarface
more
Scarface is much more terrifying.
Than Snorky.
Snorky, haha. And I guess we'll call you that.
I guess we can call you Snorky if you want.
All right. Snork, snork.
He quickly became like the top dog in Chicago.
Yeah.
Incredibly wealthy. We don't know exactly how much he made because
I'm rich enough that you, I mean, at a certain point, you can choose your own nickname, I guess.
Call me Snorky.
Call me Snorky.
Nobody called him Snorky. Everyone called him Scarface.
Yeah.
But he went by Snorky. Incredibly brutal criminal. Ridiculous amount of murders, ridiculous amount of money. And it was a strange thing because everybody knew he was out.
Imagine Snorky's just, imagine, let's say.
Yeah.
That the series went a little different.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, he's standing in the desert. And he says, say my name. And he goes, I know who you are. Say it. Say my name. He goes, you're Snorky.
Snorky.
It's so stupid.
It is dumb. It is dumb.
Yeah. Heisenberg is...
It's cool.
Yeah.
Snorky? Not. Snorky is only a letter away from Snooky.
Maybe that's why she chose it.
Maybe. She wanted to be like Al Capone. She is the head of the mafia in New Jersey.
That'd be wild.
Al Capone's incredibly wealthy. And what's strange is he is leading an insane criminal enterprise
right.
where they're killing people left and right.
Sure.
And blood is soaking the streets quite literally from directly from right. the work of Al Capone. But Al Capone was also a like cherished public figure. He would walk in to Wrigley Stadium.
Standing ovations.
And yeah, and he would sign autographs. People would be looking for his autograph and he'd be signing autographs. He would be Santa at the mall every year and kids would sit on his lap.
No.
And he would dress up as Santa every year. Like he was a part of like the local community. He was a staple in the community. He was that guy in Chicago. But he was also
that guy
in Chicago. And it's...
Do you think it was an aberration of fear?
I think it might have been a little of both. Because I think a lot of people knew, but I do think there was probably a lot of people who were just like, yeah, it's the local rich guy who just does a lot for the community.
The local rich guy.
Yeah, and people are like, I don't really know why he's rich. I hear he dumps a lot of stuff in the river.
Like Christmas bodies. One year, he got visited by the ghost of Christmas past or something. And he was like, whoa, people in the past were really dumb. You know?
Yeah, and then the ghost of Christmas past told him they're just as dumb today. And he's like,
you can kill anyone you want and get away with it. And he's like, okay, good. Hey, Merry Christmas, Snorky.
And so this is an interesting time because it's the late 1920s mm-hmm. and the perception of prohibition is changing, particularly among the temperance people. All the people who campaigned for it early on, the conservative Christians, were like, hey, turns out this is way worse. People are significantly drunker.
Yeah.
Little kids are drinking. Women and men are drinking together. There's blood in the streets. People are getting each other down all the time.
Blood in the streets.
Crime is worse. And it was objectively, crime was objectively worse.
Yeah.
And a lot of people lost their jobs. Like that was kind of one thing that was an oversight is like overnight, saloons, bars, liquor stores, all the companies that manufactured alcohol, like,
Shut down
or had to cut the majority of their staff because now they're just manufacturing for clergy, basically.
Right.
And so it was a massive hit to the economy because alcohol was a big part of the economy. And so it caused a lot of damage that I think a lot of people didn't foresee at the time.
Right.
And so the conservative Christians changed their mind and they were like, this is bad. And so they started campaigning for alcohol to come back.
They're like, you guys drink more. We still won't,
but it should at least be legal because this is bad. This is not going well.
Yeah.
And so the campaigns started up again and they started campaigning for it and picketing for it. And then members of the community that were like, not the conservative Christians, but they wanted alcohol to be legal again, started campaigning as well.
Sure.
And this led to one of my favorite photos of all time.
We want beer.
Yeah, this picket line and all the signs just say, we want beer.
1933.
Which is incredible. And these are the same women that were campaigning for it to be illegal in the first place with all the signs that say liquor that touches these lips. Lips that touch liquor shall not touch ours are now
I mean, look at the, you know, the lady down front. This one right here.
Yeah. Well, I think that's Carrie.
Is it really? Go back.
It looks a lot like Carrie.
Oh, yeah. It might be.
But now they're campaigning for prohibition to get overturned. And it's making progress, but at this point, it's an amendment, 18th Amendment, and that's
right.
hard to get that undone. Well, luckily, Al Capone, he kind of fired the nail in the coffin, as it were, because one day, he arranged a deal with a local Irish mafia and had a group of them come meet a group of his mafia men for a trade. Of alcohol. And so they were going to buy a bunch of alcohol and they were going to sell it, whatever, you know, pretty typical thing that the mafia would do. And so seven or eight of them showed up and Al Capone's mobsters were there and they were all dressed like cops. And they told all the Irish mob to line up against the wall and they just gunned them down. And this was known as the Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah.
It was on Valentine's Day. This event was kind of the nail in the coffin where everyone was like, oh yeah, this is...
Snorky's bad.
This is out of hand. This is getting out of hand.
Snorky's right? being bad in public right now.
So yeah, Snorky gets arrested. He gets sent to San Francisco. What's that island
Alcatraz?
Called? Alcatraz, thank you. He gets sent to Alcatraz. Snorky. And then...
that's what he prefers to go by.
Yeah. It's, it says it on his little vest. Snorky. He walks into the jail and everyone's
his vest?
Hey, Snorky.
Is he working at Home Depot? Or it's got written on there, my name is?
My name is
What do you Snorky. Mean it's written on his...
What the heck are you talking about? His little jail vest.
Oh, okay.
A shirt? I don't know what you want me to call it.
It's a prison. He's like, prison Snorky robes. Was not the right name for Snorky, me here. I should have gone by Scarface. I would have so much Scarface more respect. Scarface would have been
way better. And so he goes to prison. And then a couple of years later, in 1933, they repeal prohibition. And it was like the liberation of France. Parties in the streets. Bars yeah. open back up. People are drinking. And the world was never the same because... like I said, the speakeasies changed the culture around alcohol.
Yeah.
And so people actually, ironically, drank a lot less after Prohibition. They still drank, but they drank a lot less. And there was people paced themselves and people would drink in mixed company.
Right.
And then regulations came that added minimum drinking ages and things like that. And so a lot of people learned that in that Prohibition, like, wow... it sounded like, hey, if it's illegal, then that's better.
Sure.
It being illegal in practice, made it possible for
yeah.
all the cultural norms to go away, all the other regulations to go away, and
right.
for it to crush the economy and create a whole new criminal underground that wouldn't have existed otherwise. So they realized that while it seemed good, prohibition actually wasn't the way to go. Regulation was the way to go. And so it became a much more heavily regulated industry than it was in the past. And the culture shifted it. And so I think, honestly, I'm curious, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm curious if that did have an impact on the way the campaign against cigarettes went. Because I think they could have campaigned to just outlaw them altogether.
Yeah, and instead they were like, we want every box to say this causes cancer.
Yeah, and we want every kid to think that you look stupid if you're smoking a cigarette. Looks
so dumb.
Yeah, and for the most part, it worked. Which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think people who smoke look stupid.
Yeah, it is kind of, I don't know. Yeah, the culture has changed. It used to be like, in the 90s, it was kind of cool. It was like, oh, you smoke? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But in
that's pretty cool.
By the time we were in high school, it's like, oh, you smoke? What?
Gross.
That's pretty lame. You smell.
You smell bad.
You smell
No one's going to want to kiss your lips.
Yeah. Lips that
She's
touch.
She's not going to make out with you, dude.
She's not going to make out with you. Yeah, so that's Prohibition. Honestly, the main reason I brought this up is for Carrie Nation. She's my new hero.
You should go for her as Halloween on Halloween.
Long live Carrie Nation. Smash, smash, smash.
Wow. I'm so fascinated by Al Capone's name being Snorky.
Snorky.
You know what his cellmate's name at Alcatraz was?
What?
The Fiddler.
The Fiddler.
Which is also cooler than Snorky. Hey, thanks for watching this episode of Things I Learned Last Night. If you like this and you want more of our show, please check out other episodes. One of my favorites is Michael Fagan, a guy who snuck into Buckingham Palace. It was kind of like his little drunk trick that he would do. And one time he actually met the Queen. It's a really fun story. We have a lot of great bits in it. If you like our show and you want us to keep doing more of it, please subscribe, follow us on Spotify, on your podcast app, leave a comment, whatever you can do. It really does help to make the show go further. So thank you so much for being here.